All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are all right. We are back again and it's another great episode today. I am joined by Craig Redpath. Craig is a musician from the Northeast, and he was in a band called the Smoking Barrels that supported Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. So yeah, it's a very exciting call with Craig, and hear all about that, how that all came about. And so yeah, it's a really good fun chat. And as well as that, we also broke down Gas Panic for the Oasis A to Z. So yeah, really good fun chat with Craig. Hope you guys enjoy it. Nothing significant really on the news front since we've last recorded. Oasis haven't got back together since my last sort of conversation with James Hargreaves. So we'll keep refreshing Liam's Twitter, but nothing new on the horizon yet. The only thing was Alan White appeared on Instagram for the first time in a while. He sort of posted a few snapshots of Oasis songs, and then he deleted them. So there you go. That's the closest we've come in the last week or so. All right. Well, look, let's just crack on with this, shall we? Without further Freddy ado, here is my conversation with Craig Redpath. So that's first step is always achieved, to hit record, which I have been known to forget to do. But anyway, welcome to the Oasis podcast. Craig Redpath, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm okay, man. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm very good. Are you particularly good? Because I know you obviously, that's a Northeast accent. Are you a Newcastle United fan? Are you buzzing at the moment?
I am, mate. Yes, I've had a season ticket for about 10 years, and then when they got rid of Rafa Benitez. So I had it from like Pardew through to Steve Bruce. So both relegations and that. We gave it up. It was me and my pal went the whole time, and we chucked it once he appointed Steve Bruce, basically. I think a lot done the same. I think there was thousands left around that time. So, but it didn't really pay off now, as I can't get a ticket to save me life.
Is that right? Is it just completely stacked out now?
We're trying to reapply for season tickets again this season, and there was the 30,000 waiting list or something, you know, so it was basically a random queuing system when they were released, and yeah, I think I was like 24,300th in the queue or something, so it wasn't happening. But yeah, it's a chance we took and we gave it up, I guess, but no, loving it at the minute, mate. Watching them all the time and that, so yeah. Nice to see them doing well.
It is exciting. It's good to have them back. Obviously, being a 90s kid, you know, I was just talking to some people tonight, actually, who lived in Newcastle in the 90s. I was like, oh, Kevin Keegan, Faustino Asprilla, Les Ferdinand. Those were the days. That was, I love that 90s Newcastle team. It was brilliant.
Called them the entertainers, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would have been like, well, I was born 1990, so my earliest memories really were just after Keegan had gone. It was like Hullett and Dalglish, I think, who followed him.
Which
went downhill from there. But then all the Bobby Robson era, which was great, you know.
Oh, of course, yeah. Bobby was there, wasn't he? Yeah, but that was the only time I've ever been to Newcastle, I think. No, I've been another time for a work thing, but like actually proper out in Newcastle is I went to see Oasis in Newcastle on the Be Here Now tour, And it was the night when Newcastle drew, was it a 3-3 draw with Barcelona? And
yes.
Yeah, and I think Asprilla might have got a hat-trick or he got a couple. And...
Well, no, I think they beat them then.
Was it three? They won 3-2 or something.
Something like that. Yeah, team got, that's right, yeah. So it would have been about, what, 97?
97, that was late 97, yeah. And because Liam was wearing a Newcastle shirt, and my mate Ben, who I went with, is a big Middlesbrough fan. So that's why we went to Newcastle, because like, okay, we can go and stay with family in Middlesbrough. And yeah, and he was absolutely gutted to see see Liam walk out in the black and white. He was like, oh,
I can
Liam.
See the picture of it now. Like I remember the top, it was like the polo neck Newcastle top with a brown ale.
Yeah.
In the middle, and he's went with there with his tambourine on the stage.
But so you grew up in Newcastle, so you said you're born 90. So what was the sort of music that was big for you when you were sort of coming through?
It all came quite late for me, really. Like I didn't start really, really getting into music till I was about 16, 17. So you would have been in sort of mid to late noughties then. So obviously Oasis in the prime, I was too young. And I kind of missed all the resurgence of the Indian guitar music in the noughties, because, you know, early to mid-noughties, it was all kicking off again, wasn't it? It was loads of bands then. The charts was full of guitar bands and that, wasn't it, around that time? But again, just kind of passed us by. So when I was really getting into music, I sort of obviously went back through all of Oasis catalogue from then. I think Don't Believe the Truth was out the first time I sort of really was like, yeah, I want to get into that band. I think I heard Layla was a single I heard on in one of my pals' cars, if I remember. So I had to kind of go backwards, really. And then obviously through that, I discovered The Verve and Stone Roses and all the Manchester stuff. And then I went to see them in Sunderland, 2007 or 8. It was not long before they broke up. And the lineup on that gig was, so Reverend and the Makers opened the show. The Enemy followed, Kasabian were after that, and then Oasis headlined it. That got us huge into Kasabian. I would probably say behind Oasis, then Kasabian were like my band. Absolutely loved Kasabian. In the Arctic Monkeys as well, around the same sort of time. So yeah, I had to kind of go back to go forward, because I wasn't that heavy into my music until sort of that age.
Yeah, fair enough. And is that then you sort of, you then pick up a guitar and start to get into it on a creative front, not just enjoying it?
It was a friend I had, still friends with him now, from high school. and his dad was like super musical, great piano player, guitar player, saxophone, he could do everything like. So me and this lad, Chris, would go into the drama studio during school. And they had like, I had guitars, acoustic guitars up on the wall, and he would just show us a few bits he was learning at home. Wonderwall and all the obvious ones is kind of where it's, I think it starts for most guitar players, that song, doesn't it? So yeah, it was about that age when I started, I picked the guitar up, and it was just a case of like, I'd get in from sixth form, which was I was in at the time, got my first guitar from Argos, 50 quid, plastic strings, big massive fretboard like that. It's like bigger than a guitar. And I used to learn just Oasis song after Oasis song after Oasis song. Like, it was an obsession, to be fair, when I got the guitar and started learning that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to stop and just sort of learned every song that I was capable of playing at the time until obviously I developed and could play more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was definitely the band that made us get pick the guitar for sure.
Mm. And was it that classic thing of, like, I had that where I could sort of sit and go, okay, I can figure out Talk Tonight, I can figure out this. Then you sort of go, oh, I'll pick up the Beatles book and go, like, what the fuck is that? No. Yeah. And then you get the Oasis book. Oh, I can play that. Yeah.
And an F sharp major 7 suspended 2. What the, you know what I mean? It's like an alphabet burp or something, man. Yeah. So yeah,
Capo it was. One, you can play anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm still that lazy now. There's not many songs I write of me own where there's probably not a capo involved somewhere. Like lazy, really lazy.
And do you think Noel's a lazy guitarist? Is that what it's all about?
Probably to a degree. I can imagine he would probably say as if you asked him himself, to a degree. I think he's got quite sort of synonymous chord patterns, I find, from learning Oasis songs and obviously just getting familiar with the chord structures he uses. And there's a lot, it's like Talk Night's a great example. There's a lot of Oasis songs where that sort of minor seventh chord progression, it appears a lot, and his High Flying Bird stuff as well. You know, Dying of the Light uses a very similar chord progression to Talk Tonight. Wonderwalls, very, very similar. Do you know what I mean? It's very similar. So I think he obviously has a bit of a pattern with a lot of his songs. And I think to a degree that's influenced some of my writing. Did you know what I mean? My third single that will be coming out later this year has that sort of very similar kind of structure to it. So lazy, I don't know if he's lazy, but he's got, you can recognise a lot of his songs through his chord structures, I think.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And so having sort of got into Oasis and sort of doing that sort of journey back of, okay, don't believe the truth and going back and listening to them, then where does that then take you to actually forming your band? And, you know, the I suppose the big thing and the, you know, one of the main reasons why I'm talking to you is that your band, like, and it seems like a pretty short space of time then, if you're only sort of getting into the guitar and sort of, you know, when you're, what would it be, like 06, 07 or something like that. And yeah, then you are, without burying the lead, supporting Noel Gallagher, like a couple of years later. I mean, that was a pretty quick couple of years.
Everything with that band happened quick. I mean, we weren't really together that long. I think our first gig was probably like 2008, 2009. And I think we'd packed it in by about 2013. So it wasn't we weren't together that long in the grand scheme of things. But so, yeah, it basically started with me and Chris, the guy I was telling you about, and another lad, Josh. So the three of us got together. Well, it was meant to be four. So the drummer, there was four of us to start with, and Sam, the drummer, would use his garage to practice and stuff. None of us really knew what we were doing, I must admit. But it was, you know, it was fun. And we struggled to sort of get Sam to play with us and stuff. He was quite busy with work and stuff at the time. So the drums became a problem. So I can't remember. I think we were at Chris's house, me, him and Josh, the bass player, and he had an electric drum kit. So I just jumped on it and we just started messing about, really. And before we knew it, I was the drummer. So we were a three piece, I was the drummer. And yeah, we'd just go out and do sort of the pubs and that, really, in the clubs. Chris's dad would help with the sound, covers mostly, but Chris was then starting to write as well.
Drink.
then, yeah, what happened? I think it was probably a year or two after being together is when the stuff was happening with Noel. So basically, we've done a fair few gigs at this stage, and we end up getting a manager who, I think the story as it goes, I think he was down in London watching Kasabian, and Noel was in the crowd. Can't remember where it was. I'm sure it was London. Anyway, he managed to get talking to Noel after the gig had finished, and kind of said, look, I'm looking after a band in the Northeast. Would you mind if I send you some of their demos and that and have a listen? Which he did. And true to Noel's word, he got back and gave a bit of feedback. It was all really positive stuff. I remember getting the phone call. I was at work at the time, and the manager rang us all and says, look, are you sitting down kind of thing? And you sort of immediately thought it was going to be bad news. I don't know why. It's like, oh, what's happened?
Who's died? Yeah.
I know who's died. Yeah. What have we done? He's like, I've got your gig. Right. Okay. And says, yeah, you're going to support Noel Gallagher at the Metro Arena in Newcastle. He's with the High Flying Birds. Obviously, Oasis had split. Then it was his first tour, the first High Flying Birds tour, the first album. So I was like, shit, what? Like, but, I mean, the Metro Arena, it's about, I think it's about 10,000 capacity or something. I don't know if you've been.
Yeah.
Big, big venue. I mean, but I think the biggest we played in front of at that point was probably about 1,000.
Yeah.
You know,
and,
so.
Had you, and what was your, like, had you had a deal and had just singles out and things at that point? Radio play?
A little bit, like, I think we were in contract with the manager, but there was no label deal or anything in place at all. We had a contract with the manager who sorted pretty much all of our stuff out, all the gigs and that. But no label or anything. The thing was, a few months before the Noel gig, I think that was March or February 2012, the December before, he got us playing with Kasabian at the same venue. So we'd done the Kasabian support. That obviously gave us quite a bit of traction and, you know, a good bit of press, like local press and stuff. And then, yeah, the Noel thing came after. So within a few months, sort of December to February, and then we'd done a tour that year after the Noel gig. So it was a sort of a very quick, like you say, explosive year, really. A lot of big, big stuff happened very, very, very quickly, which is probably why it all felt a bit by the end, to be honest.
Yeah.
Probably all too quick in hindsight, but you're not going to turn that sort of stuff down at whatever stage you're at, I don't think. I don't think anybody would.
No, that's crazy. You can't possibly turn it down, can you? But yeah, but I understand it. It's like going back to, we started talking about football. That's literally like the 16-year-old getting thrown in the first team, isn't it? We're like, whoa, okay, yeah. Here you go. Yeah. But
yeah,
that is crazy.
It was good. I mean, I don't know what was sort of the highlight, was either the gig or me. He came down to see us before we went on. So what happened is the singer's dad, Mark, who was the guy who, like I say, sorted all the sound out and stuff, he went to get some food for us in the canteen. And then about 10, 15 minutes later, there was a knock on the door, and we just presumed it was Mark coming back with the food for us all, and like the green room in the back sort of thing. So we left it, and then he sort of like brayed on the door. So we sort of shouted, come in, Mark. And then eventually went and opened it, and Noel was kind of stood there. I'm sure it was me who opened the door. And I just remember the sort of the jaw like hitting the floor. Like, say, oh, can I come in? Just come have a bit chat on ways and stuff. Like, yeah, of course you can, get yourself in. So,
no, so, actually, yeah. This is our dressing room. Get out.
Yeah, no, sorry, no. We've got some rehearsing to do on stage in 10 minutes, mate. I'll come back. Busy. But yeah, he came in and 15, 20 minutes or so, just sort of talked to us about studios he'd been using. I think it'd been the Brits a few weeks before, told me how that had went and that. So for me, I think them moments with him, you know, in the dressing room with the band probably trumped the gig itself, if I'm honest. It was so surreal, you know.
Yeah. So you just came and sat down with you and just cool. No guard with him or anything like that?
Nah, nothing. Dead nice, you know what I mean? And friendly and stuff. We got a photo with him. I've still got the photo on my phone to this day. Like, and we look really, really young in it. But yeah, just stood with them. Yeah, just dead chatty and give a bit of advice when it comes to recordings. I think we were doing the studio that summer to do some stuff. So he gave us some sort of tips and things to do when we go back in the studio and that. And I remember this. I remember because I was drumming at the time, but I was going to be going back onto the guitar, and Sam, the original drummer, was come back into the band, so we're going to go back with four piece these sort of few years later. I remember Noel asking what we're all done, and when I told him I was the drummer tonight, but I was going to be on the guitar by the summer. This was just before the photo was taken, actually. I told him that we sort of sat there up, like arms on each other for the photo. I can remember him saying to him in the ear, he had his arm over and he just went, "You smart ass little fucker." And then the photo was taken. And then so I just got this sort of beaming grin on my face. Like, I've never been so humbled to be called the smart ass little fucker by anyone in my life.
So why was he called? Because of the fact that you hadn't just said, "Oh, I play the drums." You were like, "Oh yeah, I play the drums, but I'm going to be going back onto guitar soon."
Well, I hope I didn't say it like that. Maybe I did. I would like to think that. I think I just, you know, yeah, like I'm drumming, but we're changing the, because Sam, the drummer, was in the dressing room. He came to watch the gig and stuff, you know.
Okay.
He's asking what we're doing, kind of thing. And I was like, you know, I'm drumming now. Sam's going to be, and then I'm doing the guitar. So yeah, I hope I didn't say it the way you just said it.
Well, you didn't quite say it as posh as I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was mad. It was a really good fun, really good moment.
That is amazing. And then what about the actual gig, like the sound check and then getting up for the gig itself? How did that all go?
It was all just loads of little like moments which were like mind blown, like turning up the venue when it was empty. So you sort of went in the back way, and they've got loads of crew come to like cart your amps and your drums off, which that was crazy. Where you're used to lugging all the stuff out the car and setting up ourselves. So there's a full crew there to take your gear. You'll then go into the arena and be able to like sort of stand on the dance floor, as it were, where the crowd are going to be, and just sort of take that in when it's just this big empty shell, kind of see the size of it. Yeah, the sound check. I had a sort of massive, massive drum monitor to the right of my ear here. So you're sort of doing the sound check and you're hitting the kick drum, and then all of a sudden this monitor's sort of blasting, like the biggest monitor I've ever seen in my life, blasting against the side of your head. Do you know what I mean? Little things like that. I've never really forgot. The gig, to be honest, is a bit of a blur. Like, yeah. I think the adrenaline probably took over big time when we played. It was a half an hour set. So I've done 8 or 9 tunes, but I don't remember a lot about being on the stage. You can't see anything. Lights are mega bright, but you could hear a lot in the crowd. The good thing was it was only us and Noel playing, so we weren't sort of on really early behind two or three others. Like the Kasabian one, Miles Kane was the main support, and we opened, so it was a little bit, about half what I would have said for that gig, which is still a good few thousand. This time, I think we were on stage about 8 o'clock.
Oh wow!
So it's probably about 3/4 full, and you could hear the difference sort of when you walk on. By this point, everyone there knows we're sort of a northeast band as well, so we're in our hometown.
Yeah,
at a big gig like that, there was a bit of a wall of noise sort of thing happening when we walked on. I do remember that, but playing and doing the songs and that, like I say, a bit of a blur, I think.
The only experience I ever had any sort of similar to that was we played, I was in a band and we never got anywhere, but I was in a band and we played a gig at like quite a decent sized venue in Reading called the Alley Cat. And it was the first proper venue I played that was like had proper lights and everything. Mostly just, you know, a little stage in a pub or whatever. Yeah. And this, like as the guys were playing, like the lights turned off. You know, it's because the lighting guy is sort of timing it with the, you know, with the music. But our guitar, I was a singer, so it didn't affect me, but some of the guitar players had never learned to play in the dark before.
Well, why would you, I suppose?
Exactly, why would you? And they had no idea. The sudden little, I suppose if you're a touring band and you're used to the fact that, oh, okay, during this bit, the lights come down or whatever, then you kind of know that when to, you know how to do that bit almost without...
Yeah, it's funny, like you say, though, it's them little things, like you say there, which I think stick out such a so far away from what you've been used to doing, I think. So stuff like the lights being great or the sound being amazing is what sticks out, isn't it?
Yeah, that is great. And then what about afterwards? Did you then sort of go and watch Noel from the side, or did you go out into the crowd?
From the side, Yeah, you obviously you could sort of get right on the side of the stage being backstage. So I remember being there, I think, for the whole set. Kasim, we went out to the middle. I guess Kasim's a bit more of a jump up and down kind of gig than the High Flying Birds were. So we kind of wanted to be in the middle of the crowd for that. But and being a little bit older for the Noel one, I wanted to sort of, and I think we all done the same, be right by the side of the stage and watch it, from as close as we could. So
Yeah.
yeah, that was cool. That was cool getting to see that close up, definitely.
Yeah. That is fantastic. And just looking at that tour, so that was February the 23rd, 2012.
Yeah.
So that tour he started with, It's Good to Be Free.
Finger at me, but I don't believe. Paint me wish on a velvet sky. You give me the answer, don't know why. In my mind, there is no time. Little things make me so happy. All I wanna do is live by the sea. Little things make me so.
And then it's just funny, right? So people often criticize Noel now because his set's been pretty much the same for quite a few years. And the only Oasis songs he does is like Half the World Away, Little by Little, Wonderwall, and Don't Like Anger. And it's like, okay, come on, give us something. But back then, it's good. So he opens with It's Good to Be Free, goes into Mucky Fingers. And then we've got a bunch of High Flying Birds tunes, then Supersonic, Talk Tonight. Half the World Away, and then the big four and the encore, whatever, Little by Little, Importance Being Idle, and Don't Look Back in Anger. So that is actually, that's it. I don't think he quite had the confidence at that time to like he has now, where he's like, no, I'm only going to put in a handful of Oasis songs. You come and see me. It's a High Flying Bird show. It was still a, this is one of his first gigs. He was still a little bit unsure, I think.
I think I can remember like interviews that he'd done around the time talking about this and him quite openly saying he didn't really know how it was going to go because he was essentially a front man now, wasn't he? Then, and I can remember him being quite unsure himself as to what and maybe he's not feeling sort of comfortable at that point. So yeah, and the couple of songs, I mean, they're maybe small obscure Oasis songs to start with than what maybe is the more fair weather Oasis fan would guess they were going to hear it. So what was it? It was Good to Be Free and Mucky Fingers, the
Mucky
first two.
Fingers, yeah.
You wouldn't expect, yeah, Mucky. I suppose, yeah. I mean, even Don't Believe the Truth. What was that? That was 2006, five, six, I think, was it?
2005, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously they've done another record since then. So it wasn't as though it was just a recent. Recent Oasis record that was on, so an interesting couple of choices to start the gig with that, isn't it?
Yeah. I think he's just always loved that song. I think he wanted it to be a single and things like that. So I think he just likes that tune. But yeah, it's never been one of my favorites. But
But yeah, it's a
that's
strange
cool.
one.
And then what about after the gig? Did you get to hang out with him at all,
Well,
or
that's
did...
probably more of a blur than the gig
Oh, really?
for different reasons, I think. Yeah, we had a we didn't get a hang up with him after, no. The only time we sort of got to see him was when he came in before we played. We had the manager had booked like downstairs in this pub right round the corner from the arena. So the band and a lot of our mates and all that, and the manager, the whole kind of team, we all went there and just had a great big party afterwards. So yeah. But I do remember this though. I remember the following night. Yeah, I think it was the following night we were playing Social Club in Bedlington. So that was a bit of a like four. I remember setting up in this
Bit of
sort
a
of pub
come
in front
down,
of
yeah.
about, oh God, yeah. It was a bit of a crash landing, but funny, you know what I mean? We obviously we had a good bit of crack on the stage about it. Sort of, but by the way, here we were the night before doing this. It's nice to be here in front of all 24 of you tonight, by the way. So yeah, that was a fall from grace. But yeah, no, it was just a bit of a sort of knees up, I think, after the gig, as you'd quite imagine we're ready for.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, that's one of the great things that, you know, and one of the things I love, you know, talking to people that have supported him or Liam, is like, it isn't always like, oh, the person that the management is plugging, you know what I mean? And you kind of get a feel for Liam sometimes, especially recently, that like some of his support acts, it's like, okay, that's because it's like they're also on Debbie's management label, you know what I mean, or something. Whereas, yeah, something like that, he's obviously like, it's almost like when he got Russ on bass or whatever, it feels like, you know, apparently Russ phones him up and says, I know, I heard you want a bass player. Yeah, can I do it? Okay, then. You know, it feels like that. It's like, you know, your manager's gone, oh, no, would you check these guys out? Yeah. Yeah, they're good. All right, let's get them on then. You know,
it's about as organic as it can be, isn't it? And it's interesting you say, because I probably never appreciated that, certainly not at the time, in terms of how it happened that sort of organically. But yeah, you're right. It's not been sort of manufactured by management groups or labels, or it was quite literally a word of mouth chance encounter with the man himself. And to his credit, he's obviously liked the music and thought, yeah, fuck it, we'll get the lads on, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, and he does like music in the if you Google kind of, you know, so I don't think we've said the name of the band, it's the Smoking Barrels. And if you Google Noel Gallagher Smoking Barrels or any combination, then what comes up is an NME blog from January 2012, so just the month before, and his tip for a new band in 2012: I like the Smoking Barrels, they've got something, a bit of hard graft and a bit of polishing in the studio, and a couple of those tunes could fly, no question. It's a bit like Kasabian, a bit like Oasis, what's not to like? That's not bad, is it?
Well, obviously that was just like attached to all of our tour posters and social media and everything. Yeah, that's what he emailed our manager back with. That was reply to the here in the demos. He responded with those exact words from memory. So yeah, funnily enough though, you went on to, he was on Radio 2, probably promoting his own album, his first one. And we knew he was on the band at Smoking Barrels. We knew that he was on that night, so we all tuned in the radio to listen to him. And the presenter on Radio 2 asked him basically a question of that nature, like, is any bands that have come through which you're kind of into and stuff. We didn't know this was going to get asked, obviously, you know what I mean? So obviously our ears pricked right up and thought, God, he's going to give us a shout out on Radio 2, yeah? And he sort of fluffed around it. He was, you know what he's like. He was well, it's nothing really worth listening to at the minute, blah, blah. But there is a band from up in the northeast called the Smoking Guns.
No!
Which I think are great. And we're sort of sat, and I can remember just, it's like time stopped. When he hasn't just got the name wrong. I don't know if this was before or after we played with him, I can't remember, but it was just that sinking, like, oh shit, there's probably some band called the Smoking Guns that night randomly started getting like hundreds of new followers and shit. Like, God knows, tip these guys. These must be good. Yeah, we see he's got the name wrong. So I remember that happening. Yeah. It was a shame.
Well, let's try and dig that out, actually. That show, some of those shows are still around on YouTube and stuff. Oh, that's a shame.
It was funny though.
Yeah, no, that's great. And what about Kasabian? Did you, when you played with them, did you get to meet them or hang out with the guys at all?
We all met different members just by hanging around backstage. We were all sort of talking about doing our own stuff. I was setting up some of my drums backstage, ready to go on and do sound check whilst Kasabian were doing theirs. So as I was backstage, I remember Miles coming off stage and we had the Smoking Barrels sort of on the drum skin. I remember Miles coming off stage. He's Scouse lad, isn't he? He came off sort of, Smoking Barrels, mate, and he's supporting, like all that. And he came up, gives a hug. So I had a bit of crack with him, which was good. And then Serge, they're the same. So Serge sort of came off and I collared him this time, sort of shouted him over. So he came over, had a chat. But yeah, I think like Chris met Tom in the canteen before we were going on and stuff. And I think Josh met Ian, can't remember the drummer's surname now. But yeah, Josh, the bass player, met Chris Havens, drummer. So we just sort of randomly met different members of the band. But yeah, that's how that happened. They didn't come in the dressing room like that. It was just sort of by fluke backstage. It was still cool though.
Oh, that is amazing. So what happened from there then? So how come this didn't sort of end up being the spur to greatness? Because I wasn't aware of you guys at the time, but then it was Andy, who's from the Northeast, who'd met you, who put us in touch, and also who'd said, oh yeah, no, I remember them, they're great. And then also Richard, who's a regular on the podcast, when I was talking to you, said, oh yeah, I remember them, they're really good. So I was like, oh, wow, okay. It was completely passed me by at the time. But yeah, having gone back and listened since we've arranged to do this, it's really good stuff. Like, if people like we said, it's Kasabian, there's a bit of the Enemy in there with like the political lyrics and things are in there. And you know what I've found interesting is that like there's quite a few of these sort of quite big anthemic-y choruses that could become straight out of Sam Fender. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But Sam Fender, if he didn't sound like Bruce Springsteen, if he sounded like The Music and Oasis and Kasabian, you know what I mean? And so that is a really strong, a really great band. And I can see exactly why Noel liked it. You know what I mean? Because it really ticked that box, like quite a few of the bands that Noel picked. It definitely has that sort of similar sound.
I think it was biggest influence, especially when we're starting. It's the band that we all obsessed over was Oasis, so there was bound to be heavy influence in the writing, especially the age when we were cutting with teeth and music, all of us, so we're all quite limited in terms of what our capabilities were, so naturally you probably are going to draw a lot from your biggest influence at the time, which definitely was Oasis. That developed, I think, as we got older. If you listen, we had two EPs out, so the first one sounds very different to the second. The first one is a bit more sort of pop indie, sort of bright music, I guess. Stella by Starlight was like that. That was sort of the favourite from the people who were into her and stuff. But that, again, very Oasis sounded, major chords, sort of happy melodies kind of thing. Whereas the second one got a bit more rocky and a bit more heavy. I remember Chris, the singer, absolutely loved. Was it Rob Harvey? The singer? He loved him. He was an excellent frontman. Funny enough, he plays guitar with him, I think, doesn't he? Mm. And I think you kind of heard our sound change as our tastes were just developing, really. But no, what you asked why it kind of didn't happen from there. I think it was a number of things. I think in hindsight, was it all a bit too soon? As in, we hadn't really sort of owned our own fan base, really. Then we didn't have sort of thousands and thousands of people who were banging to the smoke and barrels by the time the Noel Gallagher came around. You know, it was still a very much sort of friends and family sort of thing. What they're doing really, which is how it all starts for everyone, do you know what I mean? So I think we probably didn't plan as well as we maybe could have done for what we're going to do post all this crazy year we had. Because we've done the Kasabian gig, we've done the Noel Gallagher gig, we've done a national tour that summer, and then it was like, shit, what do we do now? Whereas I think if you already had a really sort of solid, substantial fan base behind you after them gigs, you'll fall back and do your own big headline shows. And do you know what I mean? We didn't have that. Then it was so quick. So I think that's a big part of it. And I think through that, the band and management at the time just drifted a bit, really. And it just it came quite a sort of natural end. I know I was the first to sort of sit down with the lads and say, look, I think I'm ready to kind of tap out here. You know, we weren't doing that much at the time, really, from where we had been. And I could kind of see it was maybe very quickly ran its course. So I sort of tapped out of it. I think the lads kept it going for about a year or so after, and then it was kind of folded. So it was a big, big thing. It was a big decision. I remember where I was. I was in Chris's house, and I told him first, and there was tears and that, you know what I mean? It was a hard thing to do. I remember driving away and pulling up in like Sainsbury's car park or something, just like beating my eyes out in the car by myself, like tragic. Oh, but it was a big, big part of the world. And do you know what I mean? We're like, dreams were like sort of coming true kind of thing with that band, meeting with idols and playing these huge shows and stuff. But it was still, and yeah, I have no regrets over it. It was still the right time to call it a day.
Oh dear, well, mate, that's a beautiful story. As I said, so many people have got similar stories of playing gigs to a certain level, but then you have that thing about, do we give it another try, or do we, you know, we've got jobs and then people get girlfriends and kids and whatever, and it becomes difficult. But yeah, but then you've got that similar story, but then bang, you've also got these crazy kind of, you know, big gigs in there as well. It's like, yeah once again, it was just that makes it that much more different, I suppose, doesn't it?
I'm pleased it was sort of done how it was. Like, I'm pleased it was like, there was no animosity in it, and it wasn't one of these sort of life getting in the way kind of things either. Do you know what I mean? It was just that band had ran its course, I think, so it was time to move on to whatever it was going to be next within music. When you haven't got a pot to piss in, I'm the girl I ain't been kids, and walked away, right out of your life. You're trying to find out who your friends are tonight. They don't want to get you back on your feet. They don't want to take you in off the street. I'm not the ones who live by the sea. I think I've got some issues, I've really got some issues.
So you said the band kind of came to that, you know, hang on for a bit after you were gone, but then it sort of folded. What about yourself? Have you've then gone on to do other music in the preceding years?
Yeah, so I had kind of a year after the Smoke and Barrels where I wasn't doing anything serious with it. Chris wrote all the songs in the Smoke and Barrels. I didn't write any of them, you know what I mean? I didn't even try. So, but I knew a fair few covers on guitar and stuff. So I would go, I'd do the odd pub gig and that, playing some cover music and stuff, for about a year. And then I was like, right, I'm ready to. I want to start a band of my own. Try writing the music, be the singer, and see how I get on. So I sort of tried my hand at writing a bit, and then it was a pal I worked with. So I showed him a couple of the stuff I'd been recording and that, and we then just start spending time at each other's houses working on my songs. I only had probably a handful, nothing to sort of write home about, pardon the pun, but you know, enough there just to sort of have a bit of fun with it, really. So me and him sort of went out as a duo for a little bit. We went down and played with one of the bands who supported us with the Smoke and Barrels down in Leicester, done a bit of a thing down there with them, which was cool. But then, yeah, that I wanted a band, really. I wanted the drums, I wanted the loudness again. So went on the hunt for a bass player and guitarist and a drummer. And that basically became the Jet Reds, which, God, we've had two different lineups of that band now, but that was the original Jet Reds lineup. And yeah, we've done quite a lot. Another sort of, probably repeating a similar sort of mistake, really, in terms of things happening quickly. We released an album and probably after being together for only maybe a year or 2 years. Wasn't long, but again, that just happened off a very random encounter with a producer in Manchester.
Oh yeah.
I was down there with my cousin just for the weekend. And we were outside having a drink, and this guy recognised the accents and kind of came up and introduced himself to me and my cousin. And this guy was from the Northeast as well, and he sort of asked what we're doing down there and whatever. Anyway, we got onto music, and this guy just happened to be sitting with a record producer in this bar called Mike Bennett. Said you should come in and meet this guy, like if you're in a band and stuff, and get chatting with him, which I did. And anyway, yeah, so got talking to this guy and spent the rest of that like afternoon and night on the drink with Mike Bennett. Went back to his flat and carried on drinking and stuff there. And we're going home the next day, me and my cousin. So got talking with this producer about what we're going to do when we get back up the Northeast. And he says, look, if you've got some songs you want to record, and I'll do them, I'll get you a studio sorted, get the band down here or wherever we're going to be, and we'll record you. We were going to do an EP at the time. So, yeah, sort of weeks and weeks later, he rang us. I can remember I was going to the Newcastle Everton game at Goodison Park, and I got the phone call off Mike Bennett, and he says, like, you know, when you're ready, I've got a studio sorted for you, and that in this summer, I'll come down, we'll get your first few tracks recorded. So we did, went down and recorded a few. That turned into a full album. And we'll put that out again probably too soon. So it was a bit of a repeat kind of performance in that regard, I think. But yeah, it was another great experience. This guy had done, like, he'd co-wrote an Ian Brown song, Golden Greats, one of his singles. Yeah. He wrote that with him, yeah. He'd done loads and loads of producing with The Fall, which was where he kind of got himself started. Yeah, all around sort of a lot around the punk scene as well. So it was kind of cool to get in with him and do a few bits with him and that. So yeah, that was sort of my next step after the Smoke and Barrels. There's nowhere left to hide. Lost in the fields, in the darkest hour, past the midnight, in the corner you count. Your know it's heavy, and you're still alive. You regret your choices now. Lost in the fields, yeah, yeah, yeah. Lost in the fields, yeah, yeah, yeah. Lost in the fields, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, lost in the.
Excellent. No, that's cool. And that was sort of around, what, like 2017, 2018?
Sounds about right, yeah. That would have been about then.
Yeah.
27, 28, yeah.
Fair play. And then you mentioned earlier you've got sort of you working on a new single now. Is this just under your name now?
Yeah, so logistics just got a little bit difficult with the Jet Reds the year before last. So where are we now? So it was 2021, yeah. So basically the guitarist had moved away and had stuff on with work and whatever. Dan and Martin moved up to Glasgow. This was, you know what I mean? We kind of knew what was happening. And it was just a case, look, we can still get together to rehearse before we gig, because we were doing one headline gigs and that at this point in the Northeast. it'll be sound, but it was just really hard to get together, even to rehearse or write or gig. So last year, I sort of thought, well, for the meantime, for me, it gets really difficult if I'm not active musically. You know what I mean? Any sort of downtime where there's nothing going on drives us crazy. Like I get very bored and just agitated. So I sort of said, yeah, last year I'll just on the side kind of go and do a solo thing, see how we get on. But it was great. Like I had a really, really good year last year. By about June, July, I think I'd done 14, 15 gigs or something. I was just absolutely hammering it, reading, writing ferociously and just trying to get really stuck into it. And then from that, I end up meeting a guy who runs a bar around where I live here up in Tynemouth, called The Archers, and I've done a few gigs for him in there. And I noticed he sort of managed a few local acts that I was familiar with. So I got talking to him and just sort of tried to see if he could help me out, really. Started working with him properly, I think August, September last year, and he manages me now. So I released my first single in November, just gone, called It's Funny How, which me dad. And it's done really well. It got like, I think it broke the top 50 in the official iTunes UK chart, and then got a number 4 in the official iTunes singer-songwriter chart. For my first one, I was buzzing with, like, so... but that last year ended really, really well. So we've got loads of cool stuff planned this year. When you feel that all is lost, I'll tell you what's to gain. I can feel a shift in sounds, feel a shift in sounds. If I have a bit of ball to ask for helping hands, to take hold of mine and we can walk through great walls. Great walls. It's funny how, despite the trauma, despite the missiles fired at your armor, you sympathize, despite the lies, the most subconscious you kept yourself dignified. It's funny how. Looking good. Exciting.
Excellent. And it feels like, you know, there is a bit of a buzz around the Northeast as well. Obviously, you've got Sam Fender leading the charge. You've got his brother as well out and about. And there was that period, especially with Sunderland as well, because you had there was a bunch of bands that came through at the same time as Maximo Park. There was like Field Music. Was it Field Music?
Yeah, Maximo Park, Future Heads.
Yeah.
Were around then as well. Yeah, there was that again, but going back to that sort of early to mid noughties time, wasn't it? When all indie bands seemed to be everywhere, there were Maxwell Park and that were amongst them, weren't they? But yeah, now, I mean, where Sam Fender's from, so he's from North Shields, and me and my girlfriend moved here last July. One of the reasons being there is just a lot happening here with music now, and I definitely think the success Sam's had, seen a shift in the music environment in the Northeast for sure, especially around these parts specifically. Everyone I've sort of met since I've moved here, music's a big thing to them, you know what I mean? That's all we're talking about. We're going to see gigs all the time. So it's a really good place to be, to play music and to be a fan of it, you know? And I think Sam Fender's got a massive, massive... massive part of playing how that's come about, like, definitely. And Liam now, you know, I went to see Liam his first gig last before Christmas. We went the Riverside up here, and I think it was about 700 odd people there, you know what I mean? It's great. It's happening up here now, definitely. There's a lot going on for music in the Northeast, definitely.
No, that's fantastic. No well, good luck with it, and let's hope it let's hope it carries on and you can ride that wave. And there's Andrew Cushion as well. Have you met Andrew or do you know him?
I've talked about things going full circle. So the manager of the Smoking Barrels is now Andrew's. There's a festival next year happening. Sorry, this year now, God. So, yeah, my manager, John, he's organised a festival in North Shields this year called Corstella. And Andrew's, I think Andrew's doing the, I think he's headlining the Sunday, I think. Future Heads are doing one of the nights.
Oh, wow.
As we're talking about, yeah. I'll be playing, there's loads of local artists on. So it's the first year of it. Full of, like I say, loads of Northeast talent, you know what I mean? So that should hopefully be another snowball effect, I think, if it goes well, you know what I mean, grow that and do it next year and get more, you know, big bands on and stuff. So that's looking good for the summertime. But you'll find your time.
Yeah, Corstella.
He put, like, John put a post out on his Facebook, I think, like saying, look, come at us with some suggestions. And we'll sort of pick a winner. And yes, Corstella won the prize. I like that.
Cool. All right, mate. Well, that sounds great. And yeah, I've been meaning to go and see, because I've interviewed Andrew, obviously, because he worked with Noel. And I mean, lovely, yeah, once again, lovely kid. And I was a bit gutted when I heard that, like, he got dropped from his record label. But then he's back and he's been doing, you know, his tune has been on TV and he's radio playing stuff. So, yeah, it seems like he's, you know, I was worried that, you know, that you know, I suppose that's the thing, when you get the taste and you give up your day job and, like, and it's all happening for you, then, like, if you don't make it, because, yeah, I think he was talking to his manager, Lee, sort of saying that, you know, these like Love Island stars and things were getting record deals based on just the social media following. You know what I mean? And it's like, and if you could be bloody the next coming of Paul McCartney, but if you haven't got, you know, 50,000 Instagram followers, then, you know, it's not going to happen for you. So yeah, it's a bit of a pain.
I don't think you can really begrudge anyone for how the, but whatever path they choose to try and get where they want to be with it, you know, people are just trying to have a crack at making a life out of music, fair play, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Your X Factors and your Voices and all this stuff, whilst it's not my cup of tea and probably isn't most musicians, I guess, it's still just kids who want to try and make some of their life with music, you know what I mean? So sure. fair play to them. So it's good sort of testament, I guess, Andrew's resolve there, you know what I mean, with what happened with his label. It would have been easy to maybe fall it there or take some time out. So it's good that he sort of still knew what he kind of wanted to do. And that, I think that sort of thing can make you, man. I guess for me, it was similar when with the Smoking Barrels, when I left that after what we'd done the year before. But it was never ever a case of I'm packing music in, you know, far from. It was just that chapter, I guess, out sounding too cliched, like it closed. So I truly think if that's what you want to do, if music's your thing and that's where you want to get at, provided you're prepared to put the graft in, and you're going to need a bit of luck along the way, I'm certain of that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You keep going at it and something will come of it, you know what I mean? So that's good on Andrew that he's stuck at it and he's getting there. He's getting some of it. He's doing well and people are talking about him, you know what I mean? It's good. It's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. All right, mate. Well, look, it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you about that stuff. And where can the kids find you if they want to hear your music or find you online?
Yeah, Facebook and Instagram, Craig Redpath Music, and the first singles everywhere. That's on Spotify, iTunes, all the normal sort of streaming places. And there'll be another two or three singles coming out quite quickly, then there'll be an EP later in the year, loads of gigs sort of plans being done, mini tours getting talked about, so the social media is probably the place to be, as it is nowadays, for all the stuff that's going on. So yeah, Craig Redpath Music and you'll find us there, mate. What song is close to seeing crept through my curtains? Sailing on the sea of sweat on a stormy night. I think he don't got a name, but I can't be certain. And in me he starts to confide.
Wonderful. All right, great. And we're going to talk about some music now as well, aren't we, for our Oasis A to Z feature. And you've sort of been quite jammy because the next one coming along is a bloody classic. It's Gas Panic.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, we could do Get Off Your High Horse Lady if you want.
No, can we stick with Gas Panic?
Yeah, that's fine. Let's stick with Gas Panic. All right. Let's stick with Gas Panic. So Gas Panic, I'm sure people know, it was on the Standing on the Shoulder of Giants album as an album track. And for many people, I mean, I can't remember where I had it in my ranking. It definitely was top 20. Very, very special song. You know, different in the Oasis catalogue. You know, one of the things that Oasis often don't get credit for is sort of stranger, darker music with lyrics, you know, the meaningful lyrics and things like this, whereas this absolutely shows that they had that in their locker, and Noel has this as a writer in his locker. But yeah, what's your immediate sort of initial thoughts on the song?
A best track on that album, in my opinion, without a doubt. The opening line, to be fair, the opening lyric, "What tongueless goes to sin crept through my curtain." I don't know what it means. I don't want to know what it means. It doesn't matter what it means. It just sounds fucking brilliant, doesn't it? You know what I mean? So, yeah, lyrically, like you say, darker than probably what they've done. I think the beat as well, like, it's a lot more sluggish sort of, I don't know. It's very different to the mid-90s Oasis that are most identified. It's not got the same pace. There's a lot of their music. It's a lot more sluggish and lazy and heavy, isn't it? You know, and I think it's not Liam's vocal isn't at its peak where he was in that time. I don't think Liam was sounding his best, but you wouldn't know it listening to that song. I don't think on record anyway. Mm. He's got his sort of snarly gruffness, which you were hearing bits of, and I guess in Be Here Now, and live, I think it just sounds incredible. I think the version of it on Familiar to Millions is one of my favourite live versions of anything they've done, because the end of the song, I think they really sort of, it turns into this crazy psychedelic improv messing about, really, when Noel on his guitar, he's scratching the hell out of it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I'm sure it's that gig, you might know better than me. I'm sure when it's got that sort of loop at the beginning and the sort of thing at the beginning, and the crowd sound quite mellow. And I think Liam's on the mic sort of saying something like, it's a tune, this, come on.
Yeah. He says, listen to like he's telling them off. Come on.
That's it.
It shows how much had the esteem he held it in, because, you know, he's normally just like rock and roll star or whatever. You know, I don't remember him ever doing that. You know, listen to this song. Telling us.
He's offended that the crowd was flat.
Yeah.
This one's for all the potheads. So you can lift your fucking arms up. Good fucking tuners, come on. Listen carefully. Man.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's an absolute banger. Great. Like I say, I think definitely the strongest on the album. It's a could it have been a single? I don't know. It doesn't reek of a single to me. But as an album track, it's up there. Like in my opinion, it's a quality tune.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it would have right, but it's as I said, it's one of my favorite Oasis songs. Definitely top 20, possibly top 10. But yeah, I agree. It's not necessarily a single material, but yeah, it is such a fantastic piece. But yeah, just to give some credits on it. So written by Noel, obviously produced by Noel and Mark Spike Stent. Bass is credited to Paul Stacey, Strange Boy and Noel. You've got a mini Moog on there, played by Tony Donaldson. You've got a flute on there, played by Charlotte Glasson. I need to find her. Whitey on drums, Liam on vocals. So we're obviously at this point in Oasis where, you know, you didn't necessarily have, Bonehead and Griggs had left during the recording.
I was going to say the bass, I didn't know that. So obviously Griggs is gone, but they haven't. Yeah. Andy Bell's not there yet, though, no.
No, Andy Bell didn't join until after the album had finished. Yeah. So Noel plays a lot of bass on this album. Or then actually Mark, Strange Boy Stacey plays quite a lot.
Does this guy playing? So when I'm sure it was on the Familiar Million set, that tune, I'm sure it was.
Mm,
This guy is credited. He played it live then, did he?
No. Once you get to Familiar to Millions, that's Andy Bell and everything. Andy Bell's there, the album version.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. But and then Noel, when he was talking about it, said it's a bit like Led Zeppelin, some smoothing hip hop. For 2 years, I used to have these difficult agony attacks. The clock was 4 one morning and I couldn't sleep. Mostly I used to wake Meg and she was forced to sit and talk with me through the night. But this night she didn't wake up. So I decided to get a guitar and write a song about how I felt. And he said, there's a version of it coming out on one of the subsequent singles, which is the demo version, which I'd done in my bedroom. It's really, really mellow and like acoustic. And by the time we got the band playing it and Alan playing it and Spike was doing his thing in the studio, all of a sudden it just turned into this, you know, it was supposed to be this really quiet, acoustic, mellow little trip, really. And then, you know, Spike was like, fuck it, man. It's just a Led Zeppelin number. And it turned out to be really good. It's one of my favorites on the album.
So, it's funny you say there when he's saying about the hip hop. That's what I'm talking about with the beat.
Yeah,
it's not a beat that's synonymous with Oasis at all. That it stands out as a hip hop beat. Yeah. You know,
because it's got
it is really hip hop. I'm sure I've heard him do this acoustically somewhere.
Yeah,
and him singing it. Without all the production around it, I think it's literally him with an acoustic guitar, singing it, and it I guess it probably sounds like he thought it was going to when it was, judging by his comments there. But obviously, good shout to the guy there, Spike. He's saying no, fuck that, man. It's a Led Zeppelin song. Is, but imagine it probably wouldn't have had quite the same impact on the ears.
Yeah. Oh, if it was just like. Released as the acoustic B-side, would not have done it at all, would it? But if you can get that, as I said, it's just the way it just builds, and it's hard to even pick out like what's going on, because it's just a soundscape. They just create this soundscape, isn't it? It's just like it's the second, hear the flute.
There's so much. It sounds like this. I mean, if you're saying the flute there, there's so much instrument going on that track, I'm sure. It sounds really muddy in a great way. There's a lot happening, isn't there? And the way the second verse sort of punches in, there's sort of like a scratch down the guitar thing.
Yeah.
And then the drums come in and then my pulse comes out of me. It slaps you in the face. Then there happens again with the solo at the end. It's big. It's a really, really, really big tune, isn't it? Big, heavy song.
Yeah.
Think now, don't be like, I don't want listeners getting on like code book and shit and correcting us here, right? Because this is what I think it's sound. I think this is what he's doing, and I'm probably wrong, but it's sort of just like it's pretty much a three chord loop.
Yeah.
He's got the cap on the first, I think. He's like me, but he plays cap was all the time. We cap was all the time. No, it basically cycles that from start to finish, changes a little bit, I think, when the drums come in on that second verse. I think he then goes to basically, so them chords there to sort of version of a C chord again with the cap one, the first fret. And then that's like a sort of G chord, the odd chords, and then just an A minor. But then after the drums kick in, it kind of changes up. And I think he just goes to a basic C, D, and an A, I think.
Yeah. So I've got it here as he's doing like C G two, which is G with a fiddled around finger. But then when he comes back in with the my pulse pumps out of beat, it then just goes C G A. Yeah.
C G A. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is so basic. You know, I mean, that's the most basic chords you could possibly imagine. But it just sounds so amazing. And I agree. It's the contrast, isn't it? Because having been so similar, but just slightly off kilter and different, and then it just the way it comes back in, you know, and you wouldn't even think as a songwriter like, oh yeah, I'll just do this based around CGA, like, well, that's just too obvious, you know. Well, don't do that, it's too obvious, think of something else. But no.
Isn't this, I think this is one of the many things I think that attracted people to the band, certainly from a musician point of view, how accessible they were, you know what I mean? Like, the Oasis songs weren't particularly difficult to learn in terms of the bare bones of them. You know what I mean? The chord structures, like I say, were similar in a lot of them, but the chords themselves weren't particularly difficult, and that's by no way a negative thing for me. It's why, you know, you I picked up the guitar and wanted to learn as much as I could, because I could quite quickly. You never think, listen to the record of that tune, you never think, maybe it's to an untrained, there's three chords and that's it in the song, effectively.
There's a couple of extras, isn't there? So and then when he goes, you better get on your knees and pray, then he goes to D and E, and then
there's
E7.
An E in there, right? Yeah. E and an E7. Yeah.
Panic is on the way, he goes E. So, yeah. Yeah, all based around that CGA, and then just that the Get On Your Knees and Pray, Panic is on the Way, just to shift it up. So it's been doing the same kind of loop all the way through. And then it's just, so when he does that, and it's so menacing the way Liam sings it.
Liam way, isn't it? Panic is on the way.
Yeah.
It seems to go on for about 10 minutes, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I know my friend Joel, who's been on the podcast loads of times, I know he loves the fact in the second verse when he says, "My eyes are dead and my throat's like a black hole." He doesn't sing like a black hole, he sings like a black hole.
Black, yeah, he puts an A before the L. Yeah,
black hole, I love it. Black, he gets an extra syllable in there.
Black hole.
Love it.
My eyes are dead and my throat's like a black hole.
It's just yeah, and that's
a night, and that first lyric again. Don't let's go sing, grab through my curtain. Sailing on the sea, I swear on a stormy night.
I think he does got a name, but I can't be certain. And in me, he starts to confide.
Confide, yeah. There's some dark, sinister, porty shit in there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's weird and psychedelic in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
But just sounds great.
And my family don't seem so familiar. That's brilliant. You know what I mean? Because there's like an extra level, isn't there, in songwriting, like where you go, you don't just say, my family, what would you say? Like a simple version would be like, you know, and my family don't talk to me anymore, you know, or it'd be like, I don't want to talk
close with my family.
Yeah. You know, but he says, but it's not even that. It's like, and my family don't seem so familiar, because then it just adds that little extra spin on it, you know.
Yeah.
That's, you know, something like that. You just
that, that could be a song, like it could be an album title, like. You know, it's he's got so many, like, he's like that though. I think he pulls out these little magical lyric moments all the time where you think, God, you could almost pull some songs apart and there could be two separate songs themselves just for the content, you know, and some of the wordplay he's got in these bizarre, like that's a great example you've used there. Like, he's, but that's his genius, isn't it, as a songwriter?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, and that's why I think why it sometimes annoys me when he doesn't take a song to another level, or when, like, he's, you can tell he's like, oh, when you can guess where he's going to go, you know what I mean? Mm. Often when a new Noel song comes out, and it'll be like, okay, he's going to rhyme that with star, or he's going to rhyme that with bright, or, you know, you just, and then you go, okay, he did. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
when you can sort of guess, you couldn't have guessed that. You know what I mean? That's the thing. When he's doing those sort of, when he can do it, then that's what annoys me. It's like when you know he could do it, but he just doesn't, you know. But then it's
interesting hearing how he came to write it, like, as you say, with him sort of getting up in the middle of the night, not being able to sleep, whatever. Maybe he was in this sort of state of delirium when he was writing it, because they're really psychedelic words for me then.
Yeah.
You know, and not something that you, like you say, you would expect. So it's worked, obviously, and it all just knits in with the psychedelia of the music as well, though I think it's all crafted perfectly as it was meant to sound, which is weird and a bit darker, with that said a few times, that hip hop beat behind it, just it all works really well, man. It's a banging tune.
No, absolutely. And in terms of live, it was played 113 times by Oasis. The last play was in Stockholm in June 2002. So they did basically play it. They played it on some of the shows in 2002, February 2002. And then the previous ones, they played it at the Barrowlands in Glasgow in 2001 on that Noise and Confusion tour. And then they played it all throughout the 2000. Obviously the 2000 tour for the Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, then into 2001. But it's dropped by two. So it's dropped in June 2002 and then doesn't come back for any of the later gigs, which is a shame. It would have always been a good one to hear live. Mm-hmm. And then Liam has played it. Liam's played it 29 times. His most recent one was February 2020 at Le Zénith in Paris.
Do we have any old fuckers in the house? Oh yeah, you're well old, man. Go on, you old fucker. This one's for the old cunt, this one's for Steptoe. Or is it Arnold? The ugly fucker, anyway, this one's for him.
And then he first played it at Newcastle Arena in November 2019.
There you go.
There you go. But yeah, so he did. He's played it a number of times. And then the only famous cover I can think of it is DMA's. DMA's did a cover version of it.
Oh, well, DMA's do a good cover, man, whatever it is, don't they?
Yeah.
They always do a good cover, DMA's.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. So I
discovered them over covers, man. Like, I Believe, they've done that cover of Shares Believe, didn't they? I heard that before any of their own stuff. I think a lot of fans of DMA's were the same. They found that first.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the DMA's version. I didn't think everyone went mad for it when it came out. And I was like, oh, well, it's like we're saying, when you strip the song back to the basic song, it's good, you know, but it really needs everything else that takes it to the next level and to make it really special. So I enjoyed it. And the kid, you know, he's a good singer, but he's not Liam, you know, and I think you need Liam to deliver that song.
And if there's a God, would you give another chance?
I think some of the Oasis catalogue is like that. I don't particularly enjoy hearing Noel do Go Let It Out. You know, I think there's somewhere it's his voice or nothing. I think it just doesn't sound anywhere near as good if he's not singing it. Now, I'll put Gas Panic and Go Let It Out in that bracket, personally. Yeah. They're not meant to sound angelic.
No.
You know what I mean? They're meant to sound rough and like he does best, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it's similar. The last one for A to Z that I just recorded the other day was Full On, which is a B-side from the around 2000s. And it's you know that one. And it's the same thing. Like, but Noel sings it. And it's like, no, if Liam sang it, it would have been a contender for the album. But as Noel sang it, it's just like...
Didn't get there. Yeah. I wish he'd given Lord Don't Slow Me Down to Liam.
Yeah.
Another banging tune. I think it's great and it's good when Noel sings it, but I remember hearing a version of Liam doing the vocal and I was like, Jesus, that should have been his tune.
I know.
I'm not saying that's the case with all Noel's sang songs, mind, you know what I mean? But there are some where you think Liam should be singing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool, mate. Well, look, thank you very much for doing that. Any closing thoughts on Gas Panic?
Well, thanks for giving us it, mate, and not giving us Get Off Your High Horse, Lady. otherwise, this might not have happened. No, it's been sweet, man. Sorry, today. I know it took a bit of time for us to get it arranged. Mm. So thanks for bearing with. It's been fun, mate. I've enjoyed it.
No, all good. All good. And we'll finish then with what's your favourite Oasis song? Have you got a particular favourite?
Yeah, Slide Away is mine.
Slide Away.
Yeah.
I don't know. How does that go?
The guitar's still here, mate. Don't tempt us, man. Yeah. No, I would say, Slide Away. And then I'll tell you what's close behind it. Probably got a bit of sentimentality, if that's a word. Sentiment. To me and my other half is Idler's Dream, the B-side on... It was on the Hindu Times. Was it Hindu Times? It was that record, I think it was from, anyway.
Yeah, it was the Hindu Times. Yeah, you're right.
Hindu Times, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, and it's a lot of the later Oasis B-sides don't get talked about or listened to a lot, but I know there's a lot of love for Idler's Dream. Yeah, I know it's a special one.
Yeah, the Slide Away is like the pinnacle for me. I think it's the perfect song. And I think it's Liam's best vocal by a country mile.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Good, mate. Well, look, thanks very much.
No, thank you, man.
No, all good, man. All good. And we will, I look forward to speaking to you soon. It'd be good to get up to Costella. That sounds like a great night out.
Yeah, it will be, mate. If you get up, get you down there, man, you see all the what the Northeast has to offer.
Has it changed? Yeah, see if it's changed since I was there in 1997. Anyway, all right. All the best, Craig. Good to speak, buddy.
Nice, man. Take care, buddy. I never did say and I wish I could. I never could pray because it's just no good. I hope you don't break my heart of stone. I don't want to scream out loud and wake up on my own. And as I close,
all right, I hope you guys enjoyed that. Very good to talk to Craig. Thank you to Andy Middleton for putting us in touch. Yeah, really good stuff. And just imagine that, getting that call out of the blue, having only played a few gigs and, you know, not really done a huge amount, and then suddenly you're bloody supporting Noel Gallagher in front of 10,000 at the Metro Arena. Absolutely crazy. But there we go. Amazing stuff. Right, and yeah, Gas Panic, brilliant to dig into that. If you'd like to give your thoughts on Gas Panic, then do feel free to get in touch and we'll put it in next episode. And speaking of that, we have had a message come in talking about Full On, a little bit of Full On, from Chris Store in Ireland. And so we've got a bit of Full On and a bit of his own stuff. And yeah, so let's hear from Chris Store.
I figured after being a listener for so long, I would finally actually contribute something to the podcast. I'm Chris Store. I'm an artist from slap bang in the middle of Ireland. I'm 20 years old, so I've been an Oasis fan for 7 years. It was around the time that I began learning guitar. I was about 13 or 14 then. And most of my early guitar practice is Oasis songs. My father bought me the Oasis edition of the Little Black Songbook, which is the chords to effectively, I think it's every album track up until Don't Believe the Truth. So it doesn't have Dig Out Your Soul, which is a shame because there's some excellent songs on that album. So that's what I would do. I would just sit in my bedroom for ages playing through all these amazing songs. And with my brother too, we'd always play Supersonic and The Importance of Being Idle acoustically together. And we'd finish like all of our rehearsal sessions with the rocked up version of Married with Children. It was always a lot of fun to play Oasis songs. And given that most of them are chord based, they're usually pretty easy to pick up and cover and just have a good time with. So yeah, Oasis, huge in our household. My father is constantly listening to Heathen Chemistry. Fuck knows why. But hey, there you go. So I guess Oasis would have inspired my dream to not only be a musician but a rock star, and I've tried to do that. I've tried to put bands together, written tons of rock songs, but it never quite came together in that traditional, like, mythic story of the rock band, of the rock star. So what I've found myself doing now is really developing myself as an artist as a whole. So I do a lot of visual art as well, and filmmaking and stuff. So music is just sort of one facet of what I do. And I've set myself this challenge this year of a set program of work. So each month I'll release a song, I'll do a painting, I'll do a fictional short film and a non-fictional one as well. So I've taken James up on his very generous offer to play new music on the podcast, which is like really cool of him and generous. Like I said, like, he doesn't have to do that. I'm sure he would very happily just do another 20 episodes of him ranking things, but no, he's using his position to shine some light on new and hopefully interesting artists, which is respectable. It's cool. I appreciate it. This is a song that I wrote last year, but it just kind of sat on my laptop unfinished for months until I was making a mini documentary about a student fashion show. And I met this photographer, Lily, who also turns out to be an incredible singer. So I asked her if she'd like to sing on it, and she was more than happy to. So the song finally got finished, and I'm really proud of it. We're really proud of it, and we're happy to finally share it with everyone. So despite not being the adored frontman of a guitar band, I like to carry that rock and roll energy through all the work I do. So, you know, this song's not exactly Bring It On Down or Head Shrinker, but, you know, towards the end, it gets going. There's a pretty rock and tom fill in there. So once again, thank you to James for this opportunity. I have been Christor. You can find me on Instagram and YouTube at This Is Christor. Hopefully this won't be the last time you'll hear from me on this podcast. This song is called Meant by Nature. Thank you. Safe home. Good night.
Great stuff. Thank you, Christor. I love that challenge of doing a new project every month. I think that's brilliant. It's what a great idea. Good thing to sort of spur you on to do it if you give yourself these sort of deadlines. Otherwise, these things just never get done. I found that actually with the Oasis podcast. I'm sort of like, you know, if I haven't done one for a couple of weeks, I've sort of started to really get itchy and think, oh, I've really got to put one out. Similarly with Britpop history, that I've given myself that kind of deadline of, well, it has to be there for the end of the month. Amazing what a deadline will do, even if it is self-imposed. So well done, mate. I hope that all goes well for you. And if you want to check out more of Christor's stuff, then the link is in the description below. All right, that'll do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly appreciated. You can support the podcast from as little as £1 or $1 a month. You can give me more money than that if you want. You can give me £1 million, I bet. But if you're going to do that, you may as well just send it to me direct, because then you wouldn't have to pay the Patreon fees. That'd be a lot easier. Next episode to go up as a Patreon exclusive is my next Wonder Walk, which is me discussing my top 20 live acts that I've seen. I didn't go top 20 gigs because, you know, Oasis probably would have been like half of them. So, yeah, so I've done top 20 live acts. That just needs to be edited and will be going up shortly. Also, the next episode going up on the main channel is a conversation I had with Richard and Katie and James from Britpop Memories. And we talked about our best song each year of the 1990s. And what I'm going to do as well is over on the Patreon is put that out as like a radio show as well, where I actually play all the tracks. So that'll be a really good one to have a listen to on the Patreon. And the main version will go out on the main channel, which will just be the, you know, the standard thing with the 30-second music clips. So check that out if you can. Follow on social media. Drop me an email if you like, oasispod@gmail.com. And until next time, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.